Please silence all electronic devices.
As a matter of fact, there's some evidence that it increases voter participation because with that voter ID, people feel like their vote is protected and there is integrity built into the system.
I don't see any reason for it to be appealed. I think it's a pretty strong argument that the judge has made. I don't know that it's the end of the matter. We just have a preliminary injunction here. We can still have a trial on the matter.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the 4th Estate Bunker on West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Happy New Year. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Glad to have you along as we get back into our weekly reviews of state politics. This week we're chatting about coal ash, a big settlement that was reached by environmental groups as well as Duke Energy. Also, a ruling in what was supposed to be a new law implementing voter ID in North Carolina. And we'll chat about 2020 as well, because it's going to be a monumental election here in the old North State. Here for the conversation, as usual, are Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray from the conservative John Locke Foundation.
Happy New Year,
guys.
Photo identification may not be needed to vote in 2020 after all. Federal Judge Loretta Biggs blocked a new law from taking effect, citing North Carolina's, quote, sordid history of racial discrimination and voter suppression stretching back to the time of slavery, close quote. Back in 2013, an election bill was blocked for targeting black and Latino voters with, quote, almost surgical precision, close quote. In this recent ruling, the judge wrote that the goals and motivations of lawmakers went virtually unchanged since then. She used the word discriminatory 58 times in her 60-page ruling. However, some Republicans were quick to point out that one of the sponsors of this latest bill was black, and two other black senators voted in support of this voter ID measure. Rob, was it really that discriminatory?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I think Judge Biggs did a great job of sniffing out what was really going on here. I think that keeps happening. The General Assembly keeps passing laws. They get struck down as racially discriminatory, and then they go back to the drawing board and kind of try to redo it again and put a little bit of a nicer face on it. But the same impact is there. I thought Judge Biggs' opinion was actually very in-depth. If you read the 60-page opinion, you can learn about the history of voter suppression, particularly that targets people of color in our state, how this is just the latest iteration of a long series of such acts. And obviously, we could still have a trial on the matter, I suppose, and we could still have more evidence come forth. But I thought that it was a very well-reasoned opinion. And I think the happy news out of all this is that we're going to have, it looks like, an election where everybody's going to actually be able to participate. We have had no real record of any widespread voter fraud or people voting without being properly registered in our state. So I think it's a good thing. It means that the March primary will go off with more people participating. And hopefully the same thing will happen in November.
A couple points with this. I think Judge Biggs' decision talks about North Carolina's long history of racial discrimination. So this transcends Republicans, Democrats across the board. I mean, if there's a long history here, I think that's something certainly that we need to note. But as we move forward with it, I mean, this latest voter ID bill or requirement, dozens of states have implemented this across the country. There has been little, if any, evidence that it decreases voter participation. As a matter of fact, there's some evidence that it increases voter participation because with that voter ID, people feel like their vote is protected and there is integrity built into the system. So I think this is an interesting ruling. As Rob said, you know, an interesting perspective on racial discrimination over centuries in North Carolina. But I think we may be looking at an appeal of this decision and for this to go forward. But we are, as many of these things, many of these election lawsuits that we've seen, we're bumping up against particular deadlines. That was one reason why she came out and said, hey, we're not going to do this. I'll file my explanation later, because the State Board of Elections was getting ready to mail out instructions of how to implement the voter ID requirement. So, you know, that's the other thing with this. She has said, certainly not for the primary. I think she said not for the year. This could be and most likely will be appealed. Where that falls down and when it happens and when a voter ID requirement, which, by the way, the voters across North Carolina approved as a constitutional amendment. I think think that's another point that needs to be made when we're talking about this. The General Assembly voted to put this as a constitutional amendment. The voters of North Carolina voted in favor of a voter ID. So there's a lot of stuff going on with this, and I don't think this discussion is over.
A major settlement to excavate more than 80 million tons of coal ash has been reached. It would end a years-long dispute over how to handle coal ash at six of the state's dumps, and it would be the largest coal ash cleanup in our nation's history. Any reservations or concerns about this compromise?
Well, we're still learning all of the details, but in general, it seems like, gosh, what a great idea. We've got some good news to start 2020. We've got environmental advocates. We've got the polluter themselves, Duke Energy, speaking out that this is the thing that we've been arguing for many years, that we can't have these temporary pools of coal ash sitting around. That's why we had the disaster on the Dan River. This is very encouraging news. I'm sure there are details in the settlement that perhaps are imperfect, but as a general matter, this is the direction we ought to be going. And I very sincerely hope that it is a harbinger of the kind of aggressive action we need to take to address the environmental crises that really confront our state right now. This ought to be the first in a long list of things where we get serious about cleaning up our mess.
Well, in my view, the key outstanding question on this is how much is it going to cost? And who's going to pay for it? And then my next question would be, is excavating this, hauling it completely out? Because part of the consideration of this as they work through the settlement is that some of those basins would have been capped or lined or mitigated rather than the complete excavation. The excavation is the most expensive part of it. So I think the questions that I'm going to be looking at as we move forward with this is how much is it going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? Were there other methods that could have been used that were less costly that would get us to where we needed to be? And then what are they going to do with all this stuff? Where are they going to take it? And what are the precautions that are going to be taken for further environmental concerns with that? So I think there's still a lot of outstanding questions involved in this.
It's going to go to lined landfills, which is a very important positive step because it's been sitting in these pools next to sources of water and rivers and lakes, which is a terrible place for it to be, and it's been polluting the groundwater. So that's we know for a fact that's what's going to happen. We also know it's going to cost billions of dollars and over several years, and if there's any justice in the world, Duke Energy will pay for it out of its profits because Duke Energy is a hugely profitable corporation that makes billions of dollars in profits every year.
Who ends up paying for that, though? The consumers of energy, Duke
well,
Energy
no, we would
consumers,
hope actually the
are the ones that pay for
the
that. So you can't just say, well, you know, Duke will pay for it, and therefore
well, yes,
it's
can,
free
actually.
To everybody
no,
else.
It's not free, but it's a matter of Duke having a slightly reduced profit margin for a few years. That's what ought to happen. They make billions of dollars in profits every year, so maybe they'll make 10% instead of 15% or 3% instead of 5%.
Investors and pension funds and
right.
other
they
things
should pay
like
for
that.
They're the ones who invested in this polluting company. They ought to bear the responsibility. That's the capitalist
but
system.
Part of the question with this is when this occurred, when those coal ash basins were developed, when it was allowed under law to do it, there were no laws that were broken when this was set up. So there's still a lot of outstanding questions, I think, with this. And there's certainly a fairness issue of who's going to pay for it, how much, and also where all this is going to end up. And I guess it goes back to, too, are we looking at other alternatives to this? Even are there other uses for coal ash other than just digging it up and taking it somewhere else and putting it in a lined landfill? Could you make something else of it? Is there a market for
it? Well, the settlement actually specifies that some of it can be used for those purposes, but the reality is that the quantities are so incredibly massive. There are so many millions of tons of this stuff. There's just no way to recycle it all into concrete and roads and things like that. They will use some of it for that reason.
If memory serves, shooting from the hip, which is always a great idea, they used just a small bit of this when they built a new runway up in Buncombe County at an airport in Asheville.
Right.
But to Rob's point, it was just a minuscule amount relative to the roughly 30 pits that existed in the state at that time.
The stuff's going to go in. It's going to be in a
landfill. You know,
the question
is
whether we're going to keep it from leaking into our groundwater and all of that. Is it going to be isolated as best as we can technologically? And that's the good part about the settlement is that we're in a position to actually move in that direction.
Let's talk 2020. Objectively speaking, this appears to be the most consequential election in North Carolina since at least 1980. Among the races on the ballot, president, governor, U.S. Senate, all 170 legislative seats. Winner controls the next round of redistricting. All 13 U.S. House seats, three of which are now open races. and 3 of the 7 seats on the state Supreme Court. Deep breath. What is the most important race in North Carolina this year and why?
I would say the most important race is those for the North Carolina Supreme Court. You know, we've talked week after week about the lawsuits that have been filed in North Carolina, all these issues that come before. It seems like even when the General Assembly makes decisions, many of those decisions end up in through the court system. So it just seems more and more that the buck ultimately stops with the North Carolina Supreme Court. I would argue those 3 seats on the Supreme Court are the most important that we'll see in this election cycle.
Well, I still come back to a point I make repeatedly here. Donald Trump is what the election is all about. President Trump is the big kahuna in all of this. He is the most important factor in the 2020 election. The results of the presidential election will go a long way toward, you know, determining the future of the human species, if you want to look at it that way. And I can't imagine a more important topic. And as long as we're talking about the courts, that obviously has enormous implications for the federal courts, which Trump has done his worst to stack with just ideologue after ideologue. So the Supreme Court's at stake. Obviously, North Carolina plays a huge role in whether Trump is reelected or not. So from my perspective, everything else is a function of the presidential election.
Finally, a podcast-only question, resolutions. This is the month to stay away from the gym, if, of course, you're a regular visitor. January, popular for salads, brushing teeth, more sleep, so on and so forth. What is a change, professional or personal, maybe both, that you're trying to implement right now?
Well, at NC Policy Watch, we've committed ourselves to breaking some new and important stories this year, so we obviously are going to be producing more and better content for 2020. Personally, maybe a marathon in 2020. We'll see.
For the record, let me just jump in before, and I'm coming to Becky now. I have a friend who hates New Year's resolutions. He thinks they're garbage, and he thinks that if you need to make a change, you should have made it on May 14th or October 1st or whenever. But I'm still posing the question.
I'm actually with your friend. I'll tell you, I fall on that side of things. But we talked, and I think we're going to talk more and more throughout 2020 about this election cycle and all the permutations and the personalities and the, you know, who said what and, you know, who likes who and that kind of thing. So, you know, really what I intend to do and what we've committed to with the John Locke Foundation is to really focus on the policies that we're talking about. Good policy makes good politics, and I hope that we can remember that. I think North Carolina's election is going to be one of the most closely watched in the country. I think we're going to see tons and tons of money pour into this. We'll be getting lots of visits from particularly the Democratic presidential candidates. A lot of attention here, and I intend to really try to focus on the policy, what's good for North Carolina, what's moving North Carolina, and not get sucked into the ugly political thing that we see happen so often.
On a personal note, Rob, your mom passed away last month. Patricia Schofield, I believe, passed away on the eve of Hanukkah. Yeah. She was 87. We heard just today, we asked you when you came in, we were sorry to hear about your loss.
Thank you. My mom was a brilliant woman, and she was actually my editor and proofreader for my column. So my readers, I will ask you to bear with me in 2020, as it probably won't be as the stories columns may not be quite as well done as they were in the past.
She raised a good son.
Yeah, thanks.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Friendly reminder, of course, you can catch Becky and Rob on the radio 4:50 Friday afternoons on All Things Considered, however you listen to WUNC. The longer version of our conversation available iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever it is that you do that on-demand listening. Feel free to pass the pod along to a neighbor, friend, colleague, frenemy, whoever, really. We're going to be chatting with Representative Holly Grange next week on the podcast as part of our long-form conversations. She's a Republican from New Hanover County, and she's seeking the Republican nomination for governor. If you've got questions or ideas about what I should talk to her about, feel free to find me on Twitter, J_TIBS. Glad to have you along. Happy 2020. We'll talk to you again soon.